Welcome to the Pretty Powerful Podcast, where powerful women are interviewed every week to share real inspiring stories and incredible insight to help women or anyone break the barriers, be a part of innovation, shatter the glass ceiling, and dominate to the top of their sport, industry, or life's mission. Join us as we celebrate exceptional women and step into our power. And now, here's your host, Angela Gennari.
Hello, and welcome to the Pretty Powerful Podcast. I'm your host, Angela Gennari, and today we are speaking with Dana Dixon. Thank you so much for joining us, Dana.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited. I love the podcast. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Empowering women and inspiring them. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I think that you've been somebody that I've wanted to interview for a while. I think you bring so much to the table. And I think our guests will really get a lot out of you, out of your conversation with me. So let me introduce Dana. So Dana Dixon is an award-winning trademark attorney. She graduated from Emory Law and has worked for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, where she reviewed thousands of trademark applications. Now Dana works on the other side of that process. She has her own law firm dedicated to helping clients on five continents protect their brands and get registrations for their logos, slogans, and business names. So that's so amazing. I'm so excited to have you.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a great discussion because I have worked with you to do my patent and logo and trademark, and you have just done an exceptional job. And you've really taken the scariness out of it for me.
I can
really appreciate that, you know, I didn't feel like there was anything, even if I stumbled through, like, I don't know what that means. You were so patient in really describing why I needed a patent or a trademark and what the differences are. So I can appreciate that. And this is exactly why I wanted to go to a female attorney, because I feel like you really do take the time to help your clients understand what it is that they're getting into, why they need it, and the importance of it long term. So I can appreciate your talent.
Thank you. That's like the nicest thing you could possibly say.
Yes. So I wanted to kind of at least start by asking, what made you get into law, or at least patent and trademarks?
Yeah, I am a first generation attorney. So no one in my family was involved with that. The only attorneys I saw were, you know, on TV and in the movies.
Yeah.
So it was not something, you know, I have a lot of friends who knew when they were 4 or 5 years old, they wanted to be attorneys. That was not something that even entered my mind until I was in my, I was in my 20s. And I was very much, I had worked in the arts and cultural scene. So I had work experience in music venues and galleries and things like that. And I was getting a master's degree in arts administration. So yeah, I thought I was going to be like a curator in a museum. That was my trajectory. Very different from what I'm doing now. But at a certain point, we had this course called Legal Issues in the Arts. And part of one of the assignments was doing informational interviews with entertainment law attorneys.
Okay.
And that was really my first kind of one-on-one interaction with a real life attorney, not someone who plays them in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the way that they thought through problems, the way they talked about it, how they kind of took everything apart and looked at it from every angle. And it just kind of clicked for me. So after that project, I was in my last quarter of my master's program and I said, oh, I've got to go to law school. And my friends gave me absolute hell for it. They're like, you're never going to graduate and actually work. But I finished up the master's program and then went to law school. So I took a very circuitous path to get
there. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. And it's funny because I actually took the exact opposite path. From the time I was little, I loved to debate everything. And so everybody would say from when I was little, she's going to be an attorney. She's definitely going to be an attorney. and that was really what I thought I would be. And so I think it was just one of those those kind of self-fulfilling prophecies where you kind of keep hearing it and keep hearing it. And then my mind is like, well, then that's what I have to be. And so it got all the way through, took pre-law as my minor. And then I ended up taking, and I would take legal English for fun. I mean, like I loved contracts. I loved everything about it. I loved contract writing. And then I got to, and I was studying criminal psychology was my major. And then I got to the point where I took my LSATs, did really well. And then I started looking at how much I owed in terms of my student debt and how much it was going to cost me for law school. And I said, I think I'm just going to take a couple years off and then I'll go back to law school. Mm-hmm. And then I never went back to law school. So I do have a passion for law. I actually find it to be incredibly fascinating. And I love the protection aspect of it. And I love helping people. But, you know, it's obviously not the path I chose ultimately, but I have so much respect for what you do because I know how difficult it is and how challenging it is and how the slightest little change of a word can totally change what that contract means. And so yes, it's very difficult and you have to be extremely detail oriented. So yeah, I respect that.
Exactly. Thank you. I mean, I fully understand. I have friends who are still trying to pay off law school debt, you know, like 10 years outside of graduation. It goes on and on and on. So I understand that decision 100%. But I'm sure all those things you learned are really helpful to you in your business now.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely is. And it really helps me to understand what I'm getting into. You know, when I read contracts that are sent to me by a client, for example, or from a vendor, I'm actually reading the contract. You know, I'm really reading it and understanding what it is. And, you know, when I first started my business and I didn't have any money and, you know, I thought I'm just going to write my own contracts. And I did. And then, you know, we get through a couple of years, we start getting bigger contracts. And I mean, these contracts were being sent to legal departments and there was very few changes, which was nice. And so, As I got bigger, I thought, you know what, I really need a real attorney to read over these contracts and edit it and make sure that they're as solid as I need them to be. Mm-hmm. And I paid them a whole bunch of money. They sent me my contracts back and they added two small clauses to the entire contract. But pretty much used my contract as it is. They're like, well, your other attorney did a good job. And I'm like, the other attorney was me. It was terrible.
It was very in-house.
In-house. We had our in-house attorney do it, but yeah. So, but no, I actually love it. And, so yeah, a whole appreciation for what you do, but your particular segment, I couldn't even touch because trademarks and patents, that's extremely detail oriented. And I know when we've worked together, you have sent me back things like, well, did you want this particular part of it or just that? And it really makes you think through all of it. And, you know, you have to really see, you know, far ahead for any potential issues that could come up. And I appreciate how thorough you are in that because it has helped me to understand what intellectual property means. So can you just tell our audience a little bit more about why a trademark or a patent is so important to your brand and kind of how you can protect yourself along those lines?
Yeah, sure. So I'll just kind of start quickly by saying what a trademark is, what a patent is, just so people get the distinction, because those things get confused a lot. Also, yes. Copyright. I'll throw a copyright in there.
Right. Yeah. All well, people use them interchangeably and they're not the same.
They all live in the same house. They're all relatives. Okay. They're all different kinds of intellectual property. Sometimes you hear people call it IP. It's just short for intellectual property because that's such a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But let's start with trademark because they're my favorite. Okay. The trademark is really anything that's going to tell us where a particular product or service is coming from. So this could be like a logo. When we see that famous Nike swoosh, we know exactly where the sneakers or the t-shirt that it's on are coming from.
Right.
Could be like a slogan. So a diamond is forever. If you see that on a package, okay, you know that jewelry comes from De Beers. Could be a product name or a business name like Target. So if I like my friend's flip-flops and I ask her where she got them and she says, oh, Target, now I know where to go to get that. There are a lot of things that can act as trademarks, but those are some of the most common ones. So these are very, very important to us as consumers on one hand, because it saves us a tremendous amount of time. You know, if you imagine trying to go to the grocery store in a world with no trademarks, we now have no logos on the packages. We have no brand names on the packages. We don't even have like distinctive package design that's going to help us figure out where the stuff is coming from. It would take us hours. Like nobody actually reads everything on the packages to figure out what they want to buy. We just develop these relationships with brands that we trust. We go back to the same things over and over again. And the trademarks are what help us to do that and save us all that time. Also very important to trademark owners, though, because this is how people will find you. You know, if they have a good experience with you, this is how they're going to come back and get more of what you have to offer. It's what they're going to type in Google, or they're going to type in Amazon to try to find you again. So you don't want anything that's too close to your competitors. You don't want people typing that, you know, word in and ending up on your competitor's website thinking they're interacting with you. But it's also the way people refer other people to you. So who knows how many times you've had a client who was talking to somebody, they have an event, they need help. And that person said, oh, you should call Titan. They did a really great job for me. Right. So in a world with no trademarks, that referral doesn't happen that way, right? So super important for business owners to be aware of the trademarks. It's one of the most important assets that you have. A lot of times people don't think about it as an asset. But really important to make that mental shift, because if somebody was thinking about acquiring your business, they for sure will think about your trademarks as an asset. They want a list of those. They want to know if you've protected them. Have you gotten registrations for these? So important to think about all of your intellectual property really as an asset, but trademarks in particular. Patents are a little bit different. So the patent is not to protect something that tells us where the product or service comes from. The patent is really protection for a kind of invention or new method or process. This happens a lot in the world of technology, but patents can be used outside of that. But it's really, you know, if you think about kind of an easy distinction here, whatever the next new great gadget that everybody must have, whatever that thing is, what makes it operate, that will probably be protected by a patent. But if I want that, I see somebody else has it and they say, oh, you can't live without this. It's amazing. It's changed my life. I need to know the trademark so I can figure out where do I go and buy it. So that's the difference between those two. And then copyright, our third intellectual property cousin. That one is really protection for the content of usually creative works. Again, it's not just limited to the artistic creative world, but that's where a lot of copyright comes into play. So things like books or movies or songs, and it's covering the content of those things. So the text in the book, the composition of the song. And kind of a quick, easy way to distinguish that from trademarks is, you know, if you think about any movie you've ever seen at the very beginning, you've got a bunch of trademarks. You've got all of these things telling you. It used to be like one or two. I feel like it's the first 5 minutes of every movie now.
I know.
But if anyone who touched this thing, you're going to see all their logos. But then, you know, if you made a movie and somebody took a scene from the middle of it, you know, 5 minute chunk of this movie, they put it on YouTube without your authorization, they've now infringed your copyright rights in the movie because they took the content of that thing.
I see. Okay. So is it similar to if you post something on Instagram or Facebook and like I was at a concert and I was recording the concert and then I posted it on Instagram and it said this infringes on copyright law, right? So it took it down, took down the, so that's part of that, right? So I posted it publicly. So even though it was something I was watching, because these lyrics are copyrighted, that's why. Is that right?
Exactly. Hit the nail on the head.
Very good. Okay, cool. So let me ask you some hard questions of things that just pop in my head. And I wonder, is code, like if somebody is writing code for a software program, would that be copyright or would that be patent?
So I will be totally upfront with you on this part, Angela. Yeah. I do 100% trademark work. So okay. I'm not going to be the best resource for like detailed things like that about copyright or patent. But I can distinguish the copyright from the trademark and the patent from the trademark, but that's about as far as I go down the patent or copyright path.
Okay. So when somebody is starting a business, and I can say I was guilty of this too, when I first started my business, I kept planning to get the trademark for my business, but I didn't do it right away because I didn't feel like it was urgent. Why should a business owner do that right away? And at what stage is it important? Is it before you start really going out to the public? Is it after you go out to the public? Like where would you suggest a business owner, when should they start that process?
As early as possible.
Okay.
Early as is humanly possible.
Right.
So I think, you know, there are many reasons why that doesn't happen. You know, one thing is that a lot of small business owners or solopreneurs, they kind of think, well, I'm so small that nobody's really going to notice me or come after me. And if they did, you know, what are they going to do? Worst case scenario, they make me change my name. Okay, I'll change my name then.
Right.
It's not the worst case scenario. So there are all kinds of things that people can ask the court for if they sue someone for trademark infringement. Mm. You know, one of those things is the profits that you made while you were using that infringing mark, which you may not have all of those profits anymore.
Right.
If you have inventory that has that mark on it, they can ask the court to order you to destroy that inventory.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes, depending on the circumstances, it may not even be limited to the amount of money that you made when you were using that mark. So there was a case I posted about recently where it was one location of a pop-up restaurant. It was not in business for that long. It wasn't like 10 years that it was in business. And they were sued for trademark infringement, along with a few other things. The court ordered them to pay $6 million.
Wow.
One location, one pop-up restaurant.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, there is kind of a common misconception that I'm so small, nobody's going to notice me, no one's going to come after me. But small size doesn't necessarily equal small liability.
Yeah.
So something to be aware of. And that's one of the reasons why you want to kind of get out ahead of this as early as possible so that you don't incur that liability.
Okay.
The other thing, I think, you know, it's very common, it's very understandable when you are running a small business or you're a solopreneur, especially in the early days, you have that never-ending to-do list. And so you may have awareness, like trademarks are out there. It's something I need to learn more about. But if it's not on fire today, it's not getting done.
Right.
Which then means a lot of people don't end up learning about trademarks until it is on fire. You know, they've gotten this cease and desist letter from somebody saying, I was using this mark before you were. You have to stop using this immediately. And you need to contact me within X number of days to confirm you have stopped using this mark. So then you're under that time pressure, trying to figure out, okay, well, what is this whole trademark thing about? And is what this person is saying even valid? I mean, do they have a good case against me? Do I have to stop using this mark? How can I find an attorney who can guide me through this and let me know if this is a really valid claim? And a lot of times for small business owners, they end up going through a forced rebrand in that situation. Because it takes tremendous resources to fight against a trademark infringement claim.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
That becomes really painful in the sense that you are having to come up with a new mark very quickly. That's not ideal. You know, your mark is going to convey things to consumers about your brand, who you are, what your company does. And you don't want to be scrambling to come up with that, you know, in 1 week or something. It should be something that you love, you feel great about, that's going to go the distance with you and your company.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect, but there's also having to make a list of everywhere that your mark appears, you know, on your website, on your business cards, and social media. I've had clients who had to go through years of Facebook posts, Instagram posts, and, you know, scrub them of any references to the old marks just painful.
Yes.
But also, you know, signage, if you have a physical location, on uniforms, a lot of times people put the logos or the business name on those for their employees to wear. So many places, if you are selling a product, the packaging of that product, you know?
Yeah.
So all of these places that you now have to go and claw back the old mark, replace it with the new one, very stressful, very time consuming.
For sure.
And that's something you want to avoid if at all possible. It's always easier to avoid a trademark problem than it is to try and clean up that mess once it's happened. So as early as possible, you want to talk to somebody who does trademark searches on a regular basis, understands how to perform those searches, how to analyze the results, and just get them to give you a risk assessment. You know, tell me, what is the level of risk I have here before I jump into using this mark? You should be able to get somebody who's competent to do that for less than $1,000. So it's a very good investment up front. Shop around. Not everyone will have that pricing, but, you know, shop around, do your homework.
Yeah.
And then you will either hear, okay, yeah, this is a low risk mark. That gives you peace of mind going forward. Or you hear, this is very high risk. And then you can make an informed decision about what you want to do. And if you want to change your mark, it's so much easier to do it in the early stages, rather than, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years into your business. You also have to think about, like, if you do a rebrand, trying to re-educate the customer that, you know, has come to associate that particular name or that particular logo with you. Now you have to hope they kind of don't fall through the cracks in this transition. It's like, yeah, we were called that, we're now called this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as early as possible.
Well, that leads me into a question, because you talk about the rebranding. So we went through a purposeful rebrand, because when I first started the company, I just kind of had a logo designed. And then as we grew, that logo, I just didn't feel like was going to grow with us. And so we redesigned our logo. Would that require a new search, even though the company name is the same, or would that just tie into the old one? How does that work? Would somebody need to do an entirely new search at that point?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on how you're using these things. Like, if you are using the wording separate from the logo, you know, then if we're just talking about the logo design being different, then this will depend on how different, how dramatically different. And so we're looking really for like a material change.
Okay.
But to explain exactly what the material change is, it's like, oh, here's, you know, new cases we can look at. Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. Because I mean, when I first started my business, part of the reason why I didn't go after, you know, the trademark and everything is because I kind of knew the logo would be temporary. I had it just inexpensively designed. And then as we got a little bit bigger, I wanted a more kind of grown up professional look. And so, you know, I, at that point is when, you know, I said, okay, we need to get serious about intellectual property. And I had spoken with my attorney or my accountant, and he's like, are your intellectual properties protected? I was like, we all know. So it just became a real big, you know, like, we need to get this done. And so, you know, thankfully you were able to do it quickly. But how protected is someone, like, let's just say they start the search. And by the way, I would not recommend doing the search on your own. Hire somebody who knows what they're looking for to do the search, because you can scour the internet, but it's not really going to be effective if, you know, you're missing some really key aspects of where that mark could be. So, but yeah, so really do your research, but also hire the right people. But how protected are you in that time frame? So let's just say it takes several months or a year sometimes for that to come back. Are you protected within that once you file, or no?
So you actually have rights in your trademark as soon as you start using it out there in the real world marketplace.
Okay.
So if you don't have a registration, then you have what we call common law rights. And that's really going to extend throughout the geographical region where you have those client interactions.
Okay.
So there is some protection, but the beauty of the federal trademark registration is that you then have a presumption of validity of your mark, your ownership of your mark, for exclusive use throughout the entire US. So even if you, you know, haven't done something in Alaska, it's okay that that's going to cover you. Nobody should be able to start a business in Alaska tomorrow with your name, right?
Okay.
Once you've got that federal registration.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it is difficult because I'm using a name Titan, you know, which is a fairly common name. And so of course there's going to be, you know, lots and lots and lots of companies that are named Titan. So, you know, having a good attorney who can really dive deep into, you know, how protected are you and how exactly do you need to do this wording in order to be protected is really key. So, you know, having somebody on your side like you, Dana, who really, you know, you protected a brand called Titan, which is not easy, you know, because it's a pretty common name. So I can appreciate how hard that is. So thank you for that. So what inspires you? Who inspires you?
No, actually, my clients are like a regular source of inspiration for
yes.
me. So to talk with them about their businesses, to understand what they're doing with their trademarks so I can actually mm-hmm. help them protect those, I have to have some pretty good idea of what are your services, what are your products. And a lot of times in those conversations, I will hear these backstories. What is the origin story for this business?
Yeah.
I have clients who had near-death experiences, and that gave them this idea for their business. They had this tremendous sense of purpose because of that.
Yes.
I have clients who their business really grew out of care for somebody who was going through something horrible, you know, maybe their child or their brother, or their sister, and they didn't want anyone else to have to experience that same thing, or at least not to the same degree in the same way. They want to make things better for other people. And so many businesses grow out of something like that, where they're trying to address, you know, a medical issue or a social issue. Mm-hmm. And it really helps to balance out my view of humanity. Because if you just paid attention to the news or social media, you know, the world looks very bleak. It is horrible things happening
yeah.
all the time. And there is truth to that. You know, something horrible is happening in the world right now. That is true, but it's not the entire story, right? Something
right.
wonderful is happening. Somebody is doing something kind and compassionate right now, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So my clients help me balance that out and be a little bit less pessimistic. So I find what they're doing really inspiring. I love this show Queer Eye. Do you ever watch this show?
Yes. It's good. It is so good.
Yeah, so much positivity.
Yeah.
So much kindness and compassion. And I love that, you know, they're coming into the lives of people who, for whatever reason, are feeling really overwhelmed. And everyone has been there, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And when you are in a rut, it's very hard to imagine your life looking any differently. And they kind of come in and resuscitate that imagination and say, well, it doesn't have to be this way. Like where we are right now is not inevitable. Mm-hmm. We could have a life that looks a little bit different. And I think everyone kind of needs that reminder from time to time, like even when things are going well,
absolutely.
Check in and kind of see where you are. Are you happy?
Yeah.
Do you want your life to keep looking this way going forward? So I love that show too. That's very
yeah. There needs to be more goodness in the world and more shows about things that are good and positive
yeah.
and people helping people. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree with you. All right. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, I talk about this on the show a lot because it's called Pretty Powerful Podcast and how we as women usually give our power away, you know, in many, many, many cases. And, you know, what does it mean to step into your power? And this podcast really, I felt, was a conversation that needed to happen because so many times in our social circles or whatever, we tend to downplay our success. We tend to downplay our accomplishments. And we don't really step into our power. We'll give that away to people along the way. You know, well, it was the team that did this, and it was this person who did this, and, you know, my kids, my spouse, my friends, my coworkers. And while all that is true, we also need to own that sometimes too. And so tell me about a time that you gave away your power and then another time that you stepped into your power.
Okay. So definitely, between the time that I graduated college and went to law school, I had a number of different jobs, you know, in the arts and cultural environment.
Yep.
And I still am a very kind of results-oriented, goals-oriented kind of person. So in working on team projects, as long as the outcome was what we were looking for, as long as it was successful, I was happy. And right. I really didn't care who got credit. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it seemed to me at the time like a really petty thing to insist on getting credit. I don't right. feel that way now, but good. I definitely did in, you know, my early 20s. So there were a lot of times where maybe I contributed the majority of the work and I got no credit for it, mm-hmm. or, you know, the lowest billing where yeah. credit was given. And it took me a long time to understand that it wasn't a petty thing to want that credit, mm-hmm. but also that it can matter in your career over the long term.
And sure.
there was a really interesting article that came out recently. There was a professor and researcher named Jordana Goodman, and okay. she was looking at this specific to the legal practice. She was mm. looking at patent attorneys and who gets the credit for the work that's done. And her report basically was saying, you know, the general pattern is that young junior associates are doing a lot of the research and writing work. Mm. And then partners are very often signing their names on that work, doing differing levels of review of that work, but essentially getting the credit for it. And that disproportionately affects women because some 40-something percent of junior associates in US firms are women.
Yeah.
But only some 20-something percent of partners in U.S. firms are.
Wow, really? That's a yeah. huge difference.
Yes. Wow. That is the topic for a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, why do you ahead. Think that? I'm curious. Is it because women step away to, you know, because everybody says, well, you know, for women, it's, you know, they do it to themselves when they leave the industry to go start a family. And I don't always think that's the case. I think more often than not, they get frustrated that there's not enough upward motion, you know, that people are taking the credit, that, you know, they're trying to play nice. They're trying to do what they need to do to, you know, be a team player. They're giving their power away on a regular basis and they're seeing other people get all the credit. And, you know, and this is something I was saying on a previous podcast, that, you know, women, there are many, many studies that show that women tend to downplay their success and their accomplishments on a resume and men will exaggerate theirs. And so that's why they get better offers, you know, better interview requests, because, you know, women go in a more humbled state and men go in a little bit more of an exaggerated state in that fake it till you make it. And women feel like, no, I can't really do that. Like, we don't feel comfortable in that space. So I wonder if that's part of it.
So there have been so many studies, the American Bar Association, like all of these other groups are trying to look into what is accounting for this gap. You know, why is it that you have almost half of your workforce at the lowest levels in the firm, you know, are women, but in terms of getting that promotion to partner, we somehow go down by about half. Wow. So we're closer to, you know, a quarter of the partners being women. Mm-hmm. And people offer up all kinds of different explanations. There's pretty much everything that you said is among the things that they offer. You know, in this particular report that Jordana Goodman put out, she was saying that these things are harmful for women in the sense that, you know, client perception, client sees the partner's sure. name on the document. Client usually thinks that's who did the work. But also in terms of transitioning to work at a different, you know, law firm or anything within that legal world, you have to give your writing samples. And so for many of these women, they're handing in writing samples that have someone else's name on them.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, yeah, it puts that hiring attorney in a really awkward position because, right. you know, I want to trust this, but how can I possibly validate it? I have a name here that is the name of your current boss who doesn't know that you're looking for a job. So
right.
I can't call ask him. You know,
right.
So it introduces this friction and doubt into a situation where there really should not be any. But
right.
it is a very, very common thing. You know, she was looking just at patent attorneys, but that's common practice throughout the legal world. I will say, you know, I should give a shout out, give credit where credit is due. The firm that I worked at out of law school is called Anderson Daly. And they actually, you know, did a wonderful job of being transparent with clients about my Good. Contributions and letting me argue in court and letting me talk in mediation. So they were wonderful. Two male partners, Michael Daly, Good. Stephen Anderson. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good. Good.
But for a lot of female attorneys, that's not the experience that they had at all. And so I think, you know, there is, from my friends, I will tell you, who have left the law or gone into some kind of non-traditional legal work, a lot of it centered around just work-life balance felt absolutely impossible to achieve. Not getting credit for the work does get frustrating after a certain amount of time. And I think just those two things together kind of eventually break the camel's back, you know, at some point.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. Absolutely. And I think for a lot of women, that frustration with not moving ahead is also what prompts us to go out on our own. Right. So it's listen, if you're not going to give credit where credit is due, I'm going to go out and do it on my own. Right. Cause I know what I bring to the table. And so instead of fighting the battle of, you know, earning that spot at the top, you just say, you know what, I'm just going to do this on my own, because that way I can be the determining factor in my destiny.
Yes. And I think for a lot of women too, you get very tired of just being disrespected routinely. Yeah. Like, these things all fit together. It's not just, I want my name on this paper. It's like, show some respect for the work that I did. I actually contributed to this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I give kudos to you, because you have your own firm. And, you know, it was actually a big factor for me and why I chose to work with you, because I thought, okay, this is a woman that, after my own heart. She's got her own firm. Her name is on the document. I love it.
Thank you. Absolutely.
I think it takes so much guts, and people don't realize that when you're really, really good at something like law, you know, and that part of your life, you know, you can run very well. And then you throw on being a business owner on top of that, how complicated it can be sometimes, because you are your own marketing, your own PR, your accounting. And so there's a lot more that goes into it than people realize. It's not just hanging a shingle outside of your office. So,
You know, I guess I didn't answer the second part of your question, is when you stepped into your power. I got sidetracked over here, but that's, you know, when I would say I really did, was opening my own law firm. And I do love all of the freedom that you have. And okay, you know, what do I want to put on my website for the text and the pictures? I get to decide that. What do I want to post on social media? What kind of work do I want to do?
Yes.
I really love trademarks, so I'm going to do 100% trademark law.
Yeah.
How do I want to structure my fees? You know, I do a lot of flat fee work, because I know clients hate the hourly thing where you get an invoice for like an email, and they're like, I sent you a tiny email. Why are you? Well, because it took 6 minutes to respond. So, you know. So just like having a vision for what I want this to look like and how I want my clients to feel about those interactions. I want it to be positive. I don't want it to be intimidating. So being able to kind of implement all those little pieces so that it comes out the way that I want, I absolutely love that. Yeah. And I'm very lucky. I mean, I had a lot of not freedom before I got that freedom. It's absolutely delicious to have it now.
Absolutely. Well, and there's one part of that, something that you said that reminds me of Maya Angelou's quote, and I'm going to destroy this quote, and it's just kind of paraphrasing it, because I have to be careful how I say things to an attorney. No, but it is, people will never remember what you say, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And you said, you know, I want, you know, this is how I want my clients to feel. And it's so true. I feel very safe when I turn things over to you. I know that you have my best interests in mind. I don't think you're nickel and diming me. You know, I've used other attorneys before where I felt like, do I even want to send them an email right now? I have a question. But is it a $400 question, or is it a I'll do the research myself question?
Yeah. How much is this question going to cost
me? Right.
Yeah.
And so you start really wondering, like, is this going to be worthwhile or not? And you never make me feel that way. You always make me feel like my questions are important and you answer the question. You'll jump on the phone with me if we need to. And, you know, you ensure that there's transparency throughout the whole process. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
What advice would you give to your 18-year-old self setting out on your journey?
Yeah, I would tell myself to recognize when you're happy.
Oh, good one.
It sounds so basic and easy, but it's not. Like there are so many times that I can look back on now being a little bit older and see that, you know, in the moment, if you had asked me, how are you? I would have said, oh, I'm so stressed, you know,
right.
I have this coming up, I have that coming up. And it genuinely is how I felt at the time. But
sure.
You know, from a distance, from some remove, I can see that was actually a really happy time in my life. That was a really good time in my life.
Yeah.
I just didn't know it or didn't feel it at the time. And you don't want to go through your life, you know, only realizing several years after the fact, oh, I was happy then.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to remind myself of it now, but I would definitely tell 18-year-old me, when you're happy, like, recognize that, feel it in the moment, acknowledge it, be grateful for it, because you don't want to let life go by before you realize that was actually good.
Yeah, I know. I'm so much better at gratitude now than I was, you know, in my 20s or even my 30s, because I feel like now I wake up and I'm genuinely grateful for the opportunities and the things that I have in my life. And it may not be vastly different from what I had back then. I'm just more aware of how fortunate I am, you know? Yeah. And so I think that rings true for me too, is that, you know, take those moments to understand how grateful you should be for where you are. So that's wonderful. So tell me about a few obstacles you've had in your career in starting out as an attorney. Can you tell me about a few things that you've had to overcome that have gotten to you to where you are now and made you better at what you do?
Sure. I think one of the biggest obstacles for me actually is being an extreme introvert.
Oh, really?
Because I think it's a superpower in some ways,
sure.
But in the context of being a lawyer or being an entrepreneur, it is definitely a challenge that you have to work around, because you have to be interacting all the time. It's just a part of that work. And I like the interactions. I think this is a common misconception about introverts. It's like, oh, so you're an introvert. You must just hate people. Not at all. And I can go to like a networking function and catch up with people. Say, oh, this is great. I can meet new people who are really interesting. And I would give that event an A+. But when I get home, I will now need to eat some cereal and in silence in the dark for a minute, you know?
Yes.
So it's not a question of whether you like the interactions or not. It's just a question of the effect that it has on you. Right? So it's very draining for me. And I think for an extrovert, you know, they leave that same networking function. Now they're pumped and ready to go.
Yeah.
And it fills them up with energy. So I just have to be very careful in terms of planning out, you know, on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, what are these things that I know are going to be draining, and do I have time in between them to kind of have that rest and recovery so I can be the best possible version of myself? I try to do those draining things like back to back to back. I will feel it. Hopefully no one else will be able to tell, but I will feel it on the inside. So, yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
You know, when I was in my 20s, I was definitely an extrovert. I love to be around people. And I think I still am to an extent, but I've found myself as I've gotten older needing to decompress. So we'll have a big event on a Saturday. And on Sunday, I turn my phone off and I don't answer any calls. And I just kind of want to, I'll go out in my yard, and I always say, I'm just going to go play in the dirt for a little while, and I'll just go plant some flowers and mow the lawn. And like, I'll find myself finding an excuse to not talk to anybody, just play in the dirt for a little while. And it makes me feel so much better. And then I can go into Monday feeling a little bit better. So
Absolutely. I can't hear you over the lawnmower. I know. So sorry.
I would answer my phone, but my hands were filled with dirt.
Exactly. So, but yeah. All those things will wait, right? They'll wait until you kind of feel up to it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one last question for you, and this has been really enjoyable. What do you wish more people knew?
So I will include myself in this. I wish we knew more about the non-virtual world all around us.
I love it. Agree.
Yeah. So I'll give you kind of a very silly example, but where I sit when I am working all day long, I am about 5 feet away from this little tree outside my window. And I don't know the species of this tree. I don't know what the animals in it are doing. There are squirrels that run up and down and they kind of like rub their face against the bark in a very particular way. They all do the same thing. I have no idea what they're doing. There are birds that come in and they'll like hop from one limb to another.
Yeah.
In kind of a choreographed way. They're doing something. I don't know what it is. It's completely mysterious to me. And I think that's because I live so much of my life as a little cyborg, you know, plugged into my computer and I'm doing everything on the internet and that world is very real to me. It makes sense to me and it's not mysterious, but the actual world I can reach out and touch.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with a lot of that. I'd feel really disconnected from it. And I think we would probably all be a little bit healthier mentally if we didn't feel so disconnected, if we were kind of integrated into that real world all around us. So I wish we knew that.
I agree. I love it. I think that's amazing. I will find myself sitting on my back porch every once in a while. I'll be sitting in my office for hours and I'll just say, okay, I need to get out of this space, and I'll go sit on my back porch and I'll work there and I'll just watch the birds and the squirrels, and it just helps me to connect a little bit better, and I feel just more peaceful immediately, just having nature around me. And you're right, it's that world outside of our office and our computer and our microphones and our Zoom calls and all of it.
Exactly. When you talk about the gardening, it's like physically getting your hands in the dirt. There's something healing about
it. It is therapeutic. It really is therapeutic. And, I will go to the store and buy a plant and come home and it's another plant I don't need that I've got to cover up in the winter. But it was like, that must have been a really stressful day. I planted that. But yes, I will go and dig in the dirt when I'm in need of some nature time. Decompression. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It really was a pleasure and an honor to have you. I'm so thrilled that you took the time to come and talk to me today. And I think you will really connect with a lot of people out there who are wondering about, should I get a trademark for my business? Should I get a patent on this idea? Should I copyright my book? Because there's so much validity to it. And I think we're all afraid of the process and we're afraid of what we don't know. So I hope that this conversation really resonates with people, that it's not scary. Just hire someone that you trust and make it so that it is a priority in your business before you really put yourself out there. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. The time flies by.
I know, it really does. But thank you, Dana. I'm everybody, if you are listening and you want to go check out Dana, she is Dana Dixon, and she will be, all of her information is on the prettypowerfulpodcast.com. So be sure to join us next time here on the Pretty Powerful Podcast, and please like, subscribe, and turn on notifications so you don't miss a future episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining our guests on the Pretty Powerful Podcast, and we hope you've gained new insight and learned from exceptional women. Remember to subscribe or check out this and all episodes on prettypowerfulpodcast.com. Visit us next time, and until then, step into your own power.